This is Speaking of Events, the podcast for event industry leaders. We bring together innovators, strategic rock stars, and visionary creatives to talk all about events, industry trends, and anything in between. And speaking of events, here is your host, Carrie Garbus.
Microsoft has been one of Ovation's clients since almost day one. I had been introduced through a friend of a colleague to somebody that was the content manager for one of the conferences a good 10 years ago. And they were looking to shake things up in terms of speaker training. So we met, we had a conversation on the phone, and then I sent them some ideas and they said, great, let's talk about this. Let's put this together in a scope of work. And I said, wonderful, I'll come out and see you in person. I mean, I had just started the company and I was hungry for a marquee client like Microsoft. And so I flew out to not Seattle, Fargo, North Dakota, because that's where they were based at the time, the content manager. And I am all excited to go on campus and meet them. And I get dressed up in a full suit because that's what people do when you go to a business meeting. You get dressed up, heels, suit, jacket. I go there. It's early fall and I get check in with security and I see everybody who works there walking around behind the security desk and realizing that I am completely 100%, like a million times overdressed. Everybody was in shorts, hoodies, flip-flops. I was mortified. I had no idea what to do. It's not like I had a quick change in my car. I decided to own it. And I confidently walked through the door, met with them in a suit, closed the deal, and realized that maybe I should probably ask somebody who works at the company prior to me arriving what the typical dress is. So that was an early lesson for me in terms of professional presence.
That's so funny. I was rooting for you. I was so glad you stayed. That you did exactly what you did. But like, so I'm constantly overdressed at Microsoft, 100% of the time, and I love it. Because it puts people off balance a little bit, right? It's who I am. It's who you are, right? It's like,
yes.
And that's bringing your authentic self to work, and it should be completely fine. It's what you're comfortable in.
Absolutely. I think had I known how casual it was, I may have taken it one step down from full suit. I would never show up. It's not in my brand to show up in shorts and flip flops. Unless I'm going to the beach.
So maybe Birkenstocks and socks. You would have gone there.
No, not even close. I mean, I'm talking maybe like slacks and a cute top, similar to what I'm donning right now. However, apropos, it was a good lesson. And also it is so full circle that I finally have a guest on Speaking of Events from Microsoft, obviously an amazing dresser, also an amazing dancer, and reported to be a fabulous human. We'll see. So step it up, Bob. We have Bob Vajon, the corporate vice president at Microsoft. Welcome to Speaking of Events, Bob. What are you wearing?
Who are you wearing, Bob?
I have a shirt that was made for me, and I have a Gucci sweater on.
You do. Yes, you do. You do. You're quite dapper. Thank you for joining me today, all the way from actual Seattle, where the real Microsoft, from the hub, right? The global hub of Microsoft.
We have 126 offices around the world now, 200,000 employees. So like, we're a truly global company. That's for sure.
Yes, well, that is for sure. So, Bob, my first question for you is, what is the one thing you wished more people knew about events?
You know, I'm torn because on one hand, I want to say how complicated they are and really what enormous effort and what a huge army of people it takes to make these things happen. But really, I think the bigger part of me wants to say how cool they are. I mean, that's what people don't understand. And I think what makes them cool is, and incredibly compelling, is the fact that when you're doing events in the corporate world, the reason the event is happening is because something incredibly important in the company is happening. That you're announcing a product, or you're making news in some way, or you're trying to motivate your sales organization to achieve the goals you've had for the coming year, or, you know, all of these different things. But every one of them are like, you know, kind of inflection points in a company where everybody's focused on it. And it is very important that it goes well. And the most senior people in the company are always involved. And so it makes it so that you're kind of in the center of everything. And so if you're somebody that likes to learn or discover or understand new concepts, or really kind of be able to kind of, with a wide variety, have kind of a different, difficult, challenging, complicated problem to solve daily, events are an amazing place to kind of get all of those buttons pushed in kind of your makeup. That's what you're into.
Yeah, absolutely. So cool, complicated, and compelling.
Wow, alliteration. That's pretty good.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you said it. You said it. So which one are you? Are you cool? Are you complicated? Or are you compelling?
My Facebook kind of tagline is relentlessly difficult to categorize. So that's what
I'm saying. Oh, I like that. Yes, absolutely. All right, Bob, I have 12 words for you. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, here they are. 12. Keep going. Corporate Vice President, Global Events, Production Studios, and Marketing Community at Microsoft. That's 12 words.
Yeah, and that it's weird because it has to wrap around my card. Like, it's dopey, you know, it does.
Yes. And it's not even a cool, like, we can't even make a cool word out of the first four letters.
There's no acronym.
So that indeed, Corporate Vice President, Global Events, Production Studios, and Marketing Community at Microsoft is your title. Mm. So what actually do you do?
Sure, that's good. So it can be thought of three parts. And they are, strangely, even though they're very different, and it's easy to kind of like, how are these things together? And the more you think about them and the way they work and the way they express themselves, they actually work quite well together. The first one is, kind of our events business. And in that way, I'm the team I work with lead is responsible for global events worldwide at Microsoft. So all of those events, experiences, whether we're launching products or doing press conferences or motivating our sales organization or participating in third-party events around the world, industry and thought leadership events, that's us doing it. And so it's just this big show-making machine, which is, you know, really fun. And it has been, and for the last 2.5 years, against the backdrop of extraordinary tragedy, we've been able to kind of reinvent events. You know, we've created this, you know, kind of new interactive television hybrid thing that is also very interesting. So that's one part, the events business. The second thing is that at Microsoft, we're very fortunate that 25 years ago, with great forethought, we built a multi-sound stage, multi-recording studio, you know, studio facility, and that's rivals any place in Hollywood I've ever worked, or any place in New York I've ever worked. You know, it's just amazing. We have 4 big sound stages and 2 recording studios with playing rooms, and you can do anything. And so that becomes this media machine where we do about 3,400, basically television shows a year. They get broadcast around the world. They have broadcast center there, satellites and everything. So, you know, crazy technology. And so that's the second piece of the business. And then the third piece of the business is really about the marketing community at Microsoft. And there are about 10,000 marketers of that 200,000 employees, professional marketers at Microsoft locally. And this marketing learning and marketing communities group that I lead, takes care of the kind of psychological well-being and the general, you know, kind of dimensionality and professional growth of the marketing community at Microsoft, both from a professional development perspective, training, learning, that kind of thing, as well as a set of communities, ERGs, employee resource groups that we run focused on, you know, a bunch of different communities and aspects of the Microsoft marketing population. And so we take care of all that as well. So there it is. Probably that was longer answer than you wanted, probably.
Wait, my question is, that's it, really? Bob, that's it. That is, wow. Yes, you are very uncategorizable. Absolutely. That's a lot. What do you think thank you for sharing.
Sure, it's fun.
What are some of the lessons you got out of that came about maybe from the past 2 years? Anything come to mind?
Yeah, I mean, like, I guess this podcast is about 2 or 3 days long. I could kind of go on forever about it.
Yeah,
but I think maybe more than anything, it's about human resilience, maybe. I mean, without trying to sound too dramatic about it, but I mean, it's just to go through, you know, the events industry just exploded, obviously, kind of on the 14th of March. And, you know, we were in the middle of a 20-city tour, you know, for our technology product called Microsoft Ignite. We're in the middle of a 12-city tour for a business decision maker show that we called it Envision. We were on our way to Mobile World Congress in Barcelona to do this big announcement with HoloLens and blah, blah, blah. You know, millions of dollars of production going out the door. And then all of a sudden, boom, gone, all of it stopping. You know, to just respond to that. And just an interesting kind of thing for us is that we had actually been pitching an idea inside Microsoft to say, hey, our sales meeting, which we used to do in Las Vegas every year, 15,000 salespeople, but that only represented about 20% of the global sales force, right? So it was like, it was always this terrible kind of political war. Who gets to go? Who gets those tickets every year? And we had actually done a presentation over the summer, kind of going into the fall, saying, hey, our conclusion was in this effort to try and bring our partners together with our salespeople in this big thing in Las Vegas and taking Las Vegas over and that kind of thing, that the only thing we'd actually accomplished is we'd made everybody unhappy. And it was actually a terrible, you know, kind of attendee experience. You know, even though you could sit back as a brand and go, look at that, we got 35,000 people here in Las Vegas, but it was terrible, right? They're on buses all the time. So we pitched this idea of saying, hey, let's make a television show that is the kind of a digital core and then gather, you know, the salespeople regionally. And so we were just like laughed out of the room. The sales leads at that time were like, are you crazy? Don't you understand? We've got to have the arena and it's got to be full. And then the pandemic hit, right? So we had this plan in our back pocket. And literally we had a presentation to the SLT, the senior management at Microsoft, on the kind of the third week of March, right after the lockdown happened. And so my boss, Chief Marketing Officer, Chris Capicella, he and I had a one-on-one earlier in that weekend. And I kind of pitched to him. I said, look, this is our chance. You know, because he and I had been plotting about this for a while. And I'm like, we should just pitch this. And he goes, look on it. He goes, do you want to do it? He goes, you go ahead. And so I went in front of the SLT and we pitched this idea of like, hey, let's dump out of everything we could do live and just focus on trying to define what it means to build a digital experience that could be a different kind of event experience. And the SLT said, yeah, do it. And I'm looking at Chris is in the room and I'm looking at him and he's like, it's crazy. And that's what gave us the impetus to kind of really go. But then to throw 110 people into a situation like that and go, okay, we're going to redefine ourselves. And guess what? In another 4 months, in 16 weeks when we get done, because we are like 16 weeks away from Build, which is a show we're going to do in 2 weeks now, third time. But it's like in 16 weeks, here's what's going to happen. We're going to have a sense of whether this is going to ever work or not. We'll have a kind of a sense of what we need in terms of a new kind of a organization. And in all likelihood, everybody's going to have a different job. So all hands on deck, you know, so like drop whatever your title is. We tell you to do something. We just need you to do it, kind of a thing. And that's where I get back to it's like, okay, now what are you made of, right? And then you really see what people are made of and you really start to understand what people are capable of, right? If they choose to, and how much it has to do with that and how much it has to do with, you know, seeing things for what they are and like facing the fear of all of that and the, you know, kind of the ambiguity and the unknown, and still keep going. And then watch people kind of almost catch up with themselves, right? Because it's just such severe change management that to me is my biggest takeaway. Because it really, you look at the people that are still standing in our organization, and there are many of them that are not there now, and or they're different. They're different people that have joined the team over the last 2 years. But all of them are very different in the vast majority of ways, in a really good way, deeply. The experience, the transparency and trust between the people on this team, it's really transformative.
Absolutely. That it has, you are right. It has changed people. I've seen it in varying ways, lots of business leaders being more transparent, that people coming to large self-realizations because they either stepped off the wheel that they were on or were forced off.
Right.
And yeah, was there a big transformation for you, do you think?
Oh, for sure. I mean, look, you know, I think when you boil it down, there's no time to think about it, but like, I grew up in an era of management leadership, and that was much more about pointing out the thing you did wrong and ridiculing you for it, because if you did that enough, you'd never do it again. You know, it's like bad dog training, right? You know, you like college coaches and, you know, even that athletic coaches, I mean, that was the drill, right? And that was modern management when I entered the workforce, and I'm product of it, right? I mean, I was an athlete in college and, you know, and I was a dancer as well. But I mean, but the same kind of hierarchical kind of thing, you know, ballet teachers and stuff like that, incredibly ridiculed, you know, the best ones, you know, and so...
I'm still in recovery for that
one. Right. You know, but the thing, you know, and I guess Elite Theater in New York and Jaime Rogers in Los Angeles, these people were just like brutal, right? And famous for it, right? And so you kind of get this sense of like, that's the way you get great, you know, or that's the way you become great in anything you pursue. And so that was deeply ingrained in me, right, as a leader. And I think I was always less abusive, I think, in general, but I had, you know, look, I had artistic impatience to the 9th degree, you know, right? Especially in my youth. And I was undoubtedly, I mean, now I really see it much more clearly, but like, you know, that's just an authoritarian leader, you know, like, and I speak with authority, and I, you know, when I come from the theater, right? So I articulate and I have energy and dynamic and I engage, and you know, I grew up in an argumentative house, you know, and this kind of thing. And so like, that's my style. But that doesn't play, you know, and it really doesn't play when you're in the middle of something as big and transformative as what we were just talking about a few minutes ago. And everybody's fraying on the edge because people are dying all over the place and Black Lives Matter is happening, stuff like that. And it's like, it got to a point, right, where I'm like, you know, and I know we have to get there, because if we don't get there, you know, like, jobs are at stake and all this stuff. Because, you know, at that time in 2020, you know, agencies closing everywhere, you know, people getting laid off, we get events teams getting laid off, whole cloth in other big technology companies, that kind of thing. So, you know, yeah, there's this urgency of like, hey, if we fail, this is not going to work out for any of us, kind of thing. And anyway, the bottom line is that finally it's like somebody goes, enough's enough, and calls HR, right? And it's like you kind of go, oof, okay, that's a wake up call. And then you know, you have to be really reflective about that and just step back. And it was just like, wow, you know, because, you know, and so it rounded me out, and that was a really good. It was a really good process to go through in the end, to take that feedback on and go, oh, yeah, that there's no more place for that anymore.
Right.
And the definition of modern leadership really has changed. And, you know, either you're going to, or, you know, there's going to be an issue. And so fortunately, you know, it's been really great to have this year. I mean, that was about a year and a half ago. And I think, you know, we just went through Microsoft Poll, which is now called our employee signal, and it's just been this kind of resounding kind of reinforcement that we're moving in the right direction, that we've listened and changed, not only myself, but as a leadership team. We got a lot of feedback at the leadership team level as well. And that's like, to do that kind of a transformative journey, deeply satisfying, right? Like to try to be on, but it's really turning yourself inside out, you know, like, and facing it and taking it on. So, you know, kind of, the saying in the leadership team is swim into the torpedo, you know, from Red October, where you kind of like you hit it before it detonates, and you get it, you know, and it's kind of not a bad metaphor.
Yes. Yes. Are you in person? Are you working in person? Are you going in these days? Are you leading remotely or mixing? What's that look like for you right now?
Well, again, there's another one of the aspects that this journey that we've been on in the last 2 years is so unique, because we never stopped. You know, we ran that studio because the studio became kind of the lifeblood of communication for Microsoft. And so we were going in 2 or 3 days a week all the way through the pandemic. And I'm happy to say, you know, we never got a case of COVID, which is pretty amazing.
Wow. That's,
you know, when you think about studio conditions and, you know, shooting and makeup and all that kind of stuff. So we had that going all the way through. Now I'm going in 2 more days a week, you know, just keeping office hours, you know, starting to help people feel comfortable. You know, so it's coming slowly back to life.
It certainly feels that way. Yeah. I think for me,
yeah, I agree.
Coming back to life is a good phrase for what's happening. I'd like to switch gears a bit.
Good.
And talk about speakers, because I'm obsessed.
Yes.
And you've certainly seen a number of them in your days at Microsoft and other industries, other companies. Do you have a speaker disaster story you would like to share?
Oof.
Or a show disaster?
I'll tell you a show disaster that involves speakers as well.
It's a twofer.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. And so up until last summer, it was the high watermark of disasters. And it was 2000 and I want to say 6 or 7. It is the next to last, it's the last keynote speech from Bill Gates at CES, which he famously did for 8 or 9 years. And my agency was lucky enough to be involved with 8 of them. And so this was his last one at the old Hilton Hotel, terrible dump of a place, but it did have the theater that Elvis played at, which is what made it attractive, I think, for CES. And so that we're on that stage. And for this last incredible celebration, you know, we've got jam-packed, fun-filled. There's like Xbox stuff, and we've got, you know, Rock Johnson is coming out with that. That's awesome. And then we have Conan O'Brien as the host of the show. And, you know, to do it with Bill, you know, sidekick. And like, it's going great. And rehearsal was hysterical. And we've got all these amazing demos because, you know, interactive television is really starting to take off and all this stuff is happening. And so rehearsal goes great. Conan's a joy to work with. It's all good. We go to dinner. Everything's fine. We come back. Everybody's getting makeup. Like there's a buzz backstage. We're excited. The place is packed. And house lights go down. And the house lights go down. And all of a sudden I hear the stage manager go, "And what is that beeping?" And all of a sudden you hear this beep, beep. "What is that beeping?" And then somebody, a stagehand goes, "It's the battery." And it's like someone literally had kicked out the plug on all of the stage electric. And it was running on backup battery power all through dinner. And the beeping was the battery going out.
About to die. Oh my gosh.
As we've hit the house lights. And it was when this is when it becomes the high watermark. The stage manager panics and goes, "Go, go, go," and starts the opening video. And now we've got to reset all these computers. And, you know, when you're doing demos of like technology that way, it's all so finicky. Like to do a restart like that is absolutely guaranteed. Nothing. The entire show worked. Not a single demo. And
oh, dear.
And thank God we had Conan O'Brien.
I was going to say, like, right.
He who had a field day, who had a field day. But, you know, it was the most sickening, like, I want to throw up because you're just rooting for one. And then this woman from Southern Bell, who was a partner of Microsoft's at the time, who was doing it, installing the interactive television server that we were working on, comes out and does her demo, and that one worked. And she said, well, at least my demo worked. Like, and the house comes down, like, of course, because it's just like, oh my God. And, you know, just as nice, just like, you know, in that innocent, like, oh, well, what a surprise, and, you know, kind of thing. And they're doing like, oh, horrific. Anyway, that's my best one. But then, last summer, it was superseded by the 35 minutes of death, which was the first sales meeting that we did in the virtual world at the beginning of the pandemic, Microsoft Ready. We'd had the success of build like 8 weeks before. And so like, we were like triumphant about that. And we come into Ready, not cocky, but like, you know, confident. And as the show is about to begin, and we'd had the week before we did the partner meeting Inspire, and that had gone very, very well. And then as the show is about to begin, we lose connectivity on the broadcast completely. It goes completely blank. And we cannot.
It's giving me an anxiety attack just thinking about
it. We cannot figure it out. And they're like running around the studio, like, and you know, when you're in a job like mine, all you can do is run around. You know what I mean? Like, that's all you need to do. You know, and you know, it's like checking in with everybody, like, is there anything right that you can do? And then about 15 minutes in, I'm like, I have to do it. I have to write this mail to all the SLT going like, we're currently holding blah, blah, blah. Took 37 minutes. And then it went great. But God, that the 37 minutes of death is now currently my high watermark for the most anxiety-ridden disaster.
What was the audience seeing? Just not like a whole screen or nothing?
Yeah, no. Well, the frame of the right. You know, the log-on experience, so that what we call the digital venue, but the hero screen, yes. Just blank.
Yep. Just was something unplugged.
I mean, basically, it's always something unplugged. Right. You know what I mean? Like, yes. That's what it is. It always is.
It's always something unplugged. Yeah. Absolutely. Oh. Okay.
Yeah, are you a little sweaty now?
I do. I think I need a mild sedative now. Okay. Because you're telling the Conan O'Brien Bill Gates story and then saying that was the watermark until this summer or two years ago. And I'm like, all I'm thinking during that story, I was paying attention, was also, well, what could have, and you're right, 37 minutes of death would have done it for sure.
Oh God. And I have to say, it, you know, I mean, for years, like in production, in shows, in rehearsal or something, tech shows, and things would go wrong, like over the column, that would be my line. Be like, right. What is that beeping? Because it would conjure such a terrible memory for everyone. Yeah.
That's amazing. Thank you. Thank you so much for sharing those. And speaking of 37 minutes of death, I think we'll rank higher in this podcast. So thank you. So you talked about, you did college sports and you did a unique college sport, actually, from what I read.
True. So very fortunate that I got to be able to pull this off. But I was a theater major and a Division I college athlete, which was, it was great that my coach and my department chair allowed me to do it. But I was a full ride scholarship for water polo and swimming.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that is unique for sure. Absolutely. And then, you also got your BA in theater.
Mm-hmm.
So save for the sports part, we had very similar backgrounds, unless you consider musical theater sport.
I do. I think dancing in the musical theater is athletic for sure.
Okay. Oh, well, thank you. I'll take it. So can you take us on a quick journey from BA theater water polo to here we are with 12 words in our title at Microsoft?
Sure. It's fun. I've been very fortunate to have a pretty eclectic career. I was lucky enough to get into equity 2 days after I graduated from college. And
that's impressive.
But a total freak. It's like just one of these things, you know, like it's another stories. But I got into equity. I worked.
I would like you to know that this is today, because we're recording on on, oh, actually tomorrow, it's Cinco de Mayo.
Yes.
Tomorrow is my equity anniversary.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
It's a noble union. And so anyway, I got in, I worked as a musical theater performer for 5 years. It was great. I mean, I loved every minute of it. It really was really fun. But there was, yes. I wanted more, you know,
I understand.
You know, if you're a creative person, like if you're creative, right. It's the same thing. Like it's like playing an orchestra. Being a performer is about interpretation of work for the most part. And then getting rejected. and that's the life. And it's fun, especially if you're working, but there's not a lot of control. And there's not a lot of, there's not a lot of outlet other than the approved interpretation through a director. And so I started writing a musical and when I finished it, it got a workshop production in New York. And, you know, my writing partner and I think were smart at the time. We, in addition to praying that we would get it moved to Broadway, wrote every creative director and advertising agencies and production companies all over the city and got them to come to the workshop, and it produced an enormous amount of work for us. And it really, it started a company for us and it made us a lot of money. It was really fun. And so we built we were a creative duo and we worked freelance for everyone in New York and Chicago. And we wrote just like tons of songs and tons of shows and tons of proposals. And it's just like, you know, writing hundreds of pages of stuff a week. And it was a great apprenticeship that paid really well. And that led to us kind of getting this opportunity to work with the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles right before they hit it really big. And we wrote a show for them and a album of songs for them. And it got produced and it toured the world for 2.5 years. And we had 4 companies touring the world. And it was a freaking unbelievable ride. You know, and I was 29, and it was really an amazing journey. And I was partnered with a guy by the name of Steven Lieber, who is a legend in the music business, invented arena rock in America. And I sat on the other side of his desk for that whole production period, like while we ran that whole thing, because I was his producing partner. I didn't give up. We didn't give up anything. And so we co-produced together. In addition to my writing partner and I being the creative team that did it all. And that was an incredible learning about business and what negotiations really were and how angry people could get at people and still do business. Like I just couldn't fathom it until I sat with him for that time. And so then that gave me a little bit of money to invest in stuff. And I started to get involved with, interactivity and virtual reality. And I've made an investment really early in 1991 in a virtual reality company. But it taught me a lot about technology, and the Turtles have taught me a lot about technology because we needed a show control that would work with the audio and the heads and everything, because they were actors, but the heads were animated, so they looked like the movie. And so then I got involved with that, and it was ahead of its time, but it was really interesting, this notion of interactive storytelling and that kind of thing, which we were screwing around with in this virtual reality company. And it led to this idea of Interfilm, which is an interactive motion picture game where an audience could control the outcome of a movie with pistol grips. They're voting, just very simple interactivity, polling for branching narrative. But at the time, there was great concern in the movie business that the theaters, multiplexes were going to not be utilized enough. And they were looking for alternative uses for their screens. And so this idea fit the bill, and it was a computer joined to 5 laser disc players that controlled 2 hours of film that you paid a movie ticket price and you got to play the game 3 times. And so you could see that the audience, the movie would turn out differently. And it was novelty, but I still find it an interesting idea, we made a movie, raised the money, made a movie, opened in New York at Lowe's 19th Street. And it made headlines. So the Today Show put us on, and we made the front page of the New York Times, the LA Times, and then Sony Pictures gave us a 5 picture deal and then committed to distribution in 25 of their theaters. They owned Lowe's theaters at the time. So it was great. So we made three pictures. We took the company public, raised a bunch of money. We built 100 theaters in the United States. It was extraordinary. It was ahead of its time. But that's what led me to Microsoft in the first place. But before I got here at Microsoft, I went to Warner Brothers and started Warner Brothers Interactive. And so I got to spend a year on the lot in Burbank and kind of build WarnerBrothers.com and that kind of thing. And then I came to Microsoft to start Microsoft Network and their first online business. And
wow.
And then started the ad business there because MSN.com did not have ads at the beginning. And then started the ad business here. And then I came in 1996, I left in 2002, and then went back to my entrepreneurial life and started an agency called PBJS, Peanut Butter Jelly Sandwich, and a couple of partners, great people. And,
yes.
And we built that over a period of 5 or 6 years and then sold it to Publicis, the French holding company.
Yep, we've done a little work with them.
Okay. And then so after that got done, Maurice Levy, who was CEO at the time, asked me to come to Paris and work on a project, putting together a bunch of agencies into a PR conglomerate, MSL, which is now MSL Group. So my family and I got to spend 2 years in Paris, and kind of working on that project and putting that agency together. And then I came back to Microsoft 6 years ago.
Wow.
There you go.
So like your current role, I'm going to say, that's it. That was amazing. That went in so many places that I didn't know. I hope everybody enjoyed that because that was fantastic. Thank you so much. We're going to round. I loved it.
Okay.
We're going to round out this time with Bob Bajan. Are you ready for our Lightning Express round?
Absolutely.
Okay. 45 seconds on the clock. 7 questions on the board. Let's go. Question number 1. What is your favorite moment in the event process?
Initial ideation.
That's a new one. What is your proudest role in the theater?
Al DeLuca in Chorus Line.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Who do you consider your mentor?
Karen Bradley, my dance teacher from college.
Please name all the Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Michelangelo, Leonardo, Raphael, and... Oh my God.
Right, there's one more, right?
There is one more. Raphael, Leonardo, Michelangelo. What am I forgetting?
I don't know, is Da Vinci in there? I don't know.
Donatello. There you go.
Oh, yes. Christ. Oh, that's what I guessed. And I said Da Vinci, and I was like, that's, yes. Okay.
There you go.
Wonderful job. That was perfect, Bob. Thank you. Next question. What do you do every day to stay healthy and sane?
I ride my bike, I write in my journal, and I practice my guitar.
Yay. If you weren't talking to me right now, what would you be doing?
I'd be writing.
Final question, water polo, skiing, or dancing?
Well, that's a tie. I will not pick.
I think that is excellent. And that is the theme for the podcast because all the things you're like, I'm undefinable. And here's 17 things. Absolutely. Congratulations, Bob Bajan. You have made it through the Lightning Express round. Woohoo! That you did it. You did it. Hey, Bob Bajan, with 12 words in your title, where can people find you if they would like to connect?
You know, on LinkedIn, Bob Bajan at LinkedIn, B Bajan. And my handle is B Bajan everywhere in the internet, so it's very easy to find.
Just go to the internet, everybody, and find B Bajan. Absolutely. Thank you so much for taking time with me this morning. This was a delight. I've learned so much. I'm extremely inspired. And what a wonderful honor to have you on Speaking of Events. Thank you so much.
It was a great pleasure being with you, Ms. Gardens.
Well, thank you. And remember, if you like events, if you love events, even if you loathe events, tell someone about this podcast. Give us a rating, like a 5-star. I don't need any words. I don't care. And a hearty again thank you to Bob Bajan of Microsoft. Thank you, listeners. What a treat today. And remember that whatever you speak about, remember to always be speaking of events.
Thanks, Bob.
Speaking of Events is sponsored by Ovation, the gold standard for professional presence and speaker development training, helping everyone get prepared, get confident, and get Ovation.